Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock Dittus. This is where we are simplifying the good life.
And I'm Aaron Flores. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are, in fact, the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and cultures, communication, and the internet. And today we be talking shop.
That's right. Yeah, bike shops, as a matter of fact. We had a fantastic interview with Sky Boyer over at Velo Cult. And I think I'm going to go in either tomorrow night or the night after and have my bike completely worked over.
Oh, yeah.
This is the first time since I've owned a bike that I think I'm going to go in and get the full Monty, whatever you call the, I don't even know what they call it.
Overhaul? Well, you're not like getting it overhauled.
I guess I'm not going to have them work on like the
tune-up?
Bottom bracket. Probably a tune-up. That sounds about right. Yeah. So I need to have that done. Anyways, Sky Boyer is the proprietor of Velo Cult. He's also the head guy there. There's a wonderful staff of other guys that are also working there. As far as I know, I think they're all guys. I don't think he employs any ladies at this point. But in the future, someday he might.
Can't think of a one right
now. Yeah, but great shop, friendly space, always being used for one thing or another. We are here in our home studio.
Yes, we are.
With your special lady friend. Should be our producer off mic today.
My special lady friend is, you might hear her cough from time to time. She is suffering with a cold. But
yeah, but we were all eating dinner before.
And making faces at me.
Yeah, and I said, Meredith, why don't you come down? And I'm regretting that now because she's going to be distracting you for this entire half hour until we start rolling the interview.
And I won't be able to swear, supposedly. Oh, shit!
Go ahead.
There we go.
Just do it.
Shit!
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck. Damn.
Well done.
All right.
Much to her chagrin. Meredith was on our podcast some time back. It was like 2 years ago, I think, now. She had a misadventure on transit, trying to get to a place that was hard to do, connecting like six different transit systems. It was a great show. That
Hood
was
River?
Episode 26, I think. I don't recall, but it was awesome. So, Meredith, you're not on mic, but thank you for sitting in with us. You're just here to give moral support.
You can talk if you want. We're just not going to be able to pick you up.
That's true. At some point, you can shout. That's it. All right.
I didn't say it.
So, hey, we got a couple of things to talk about before we launch into the interview. And first one is, last week we called for drunk texts and calls.
Yes.
And boy, did we get one. I'll just read them here. I got a string of five of them.
I don't have them. I would love to read them, but you do that.
Okay. They are right here. The number, again, if you want to drunk text us, if you had some beers, you're feeling it, you're listening to our show perhaps, and you want to chime in on whatever you think is interesting or necessary to add your viewpoint to.
You know, number, or if you just want to give us a string of swear words.
Oh, sure. Whatever you want. It's 503-847-9774. That works for text messages. It works for calls. We do
picture messages.
I think it might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
give it a
shot.
I'm
not sure I want to encourage that.
It's true.
What the heck?
Here's a picture of my junk.
Right.
So I've got, let's see. I got one here from Dan in Minnesota. Hey, guys, I had six beers. Thought I would text. Burp. Message number two. This is Dan from Minnesota. Message number three. I cannot wait until spring, until the snow will be gone. And I can bike again. I got a folding bike, a 3-speed Raleigh. I cannot wait to ride it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I have never seen a folding Raleigh.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it exists. And I mean,
well,
folding bikes.
It does.
And yeah, he's got one.
He's got one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Dan.
Send us pictures.
Totally.
Maybe when you sober up.
Yeah. Next message. The Sprocket Podcast has helped me in that I am not the only one living like this. Bikes, beer, simple living in a tiny house. And, you know, congratulations. Good job.
Yeah.
Last message. Oh, yeah. Say fuck for me. So, fuck. There it is. If you would like to add your voice to this vibrant conversation, 503-847-9774. Also, you can email us. It's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Got excited there. So, there's that. And I was involved last weekend, Aaron, in a bike move. Move by bike.
Yeah.
And it's now impossible.
Had to miss it.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's okay.
I was working.
No, you're doing a good thing.
I try
and
my best.
Making a buck or two. It's a good thing to keep your wallet lined and be able to pay stuff.
Try to stay afloat.
Yeah.
Keeping my head above water.
Yeah.
Making waves while I can.
This
like
was
the Jeffersons.
Yeah. Jeffersons?
That was their line.
$2 bills?
No.
Oh.
the old 1980s sitcom.
Oh, the Jetsons.
Jeffersons.
Jeffersons. I am totally unfamiliar.
I just referenced them is what I was trying to say.
Gotcha. What was the Jeffersons about?
George Jefferson,
okay.
Who, by the way, used to be a neighbor of Archie Bunker from uh-huh. All in the Family, owns what eventually becomes a string of laundromats. And so him and his family moved to a high-rise in New York, I believe. And so the idea, you know, is successful black businessman in all-white high-rise.
Okay.
Hilarity ensues.
Hijinks, yeah. Yes. That, okay. Well, now I know.
Yeah. So when I said, keeping my head above water, making my waves when I can.
Now it makes sense.
That's from the theme song.
Thank you for thanks for explaining that to me. I just don't watch television. I don't know anything. I haven't watched television for most of my life.
I just feel really bad for co-opting the conversation.
No. These things are important. Okay. Okay. Got to know. You have to bridge the gap from one person to another.
Okay.
My common knowledge and your common knowledge don't always overlap, and when they do, we learn something.
That's true.
Yeah. So I was involved in this bike move.
Do it.
And it was Steph Routh and her partner Ed. They moved from North Portland to Southeast Portland. They actually live very close to where we are right now, which is kind of cool.
And what was the KBOO connection?
She has done a lot of work
for... You mentioned KBOO, and I actually was on their site trying to find it at one point to give others the information.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything on the KBOO site about the bike move, but she's been doing some work for them. I think mostly right now she's done produced segments. Okay. So if they ever do a show where like it's man on the street interviews, or she did the segment with Jonathan Moss a couple weeks ago or months ago. It's a monthly show, just one show a month. But yeah, she's a great interviewer and a great all around person. She's also in I don't know if she's in charge. She's one of the key people in OregonWalks.org. Formerly the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, and also was featured on our show on episode 102. So
not very long ago.
Not too long back, yeah. we're up to, what is this, is 115. We're doing all right.
Not bad.
Yeah, I feel good about that. So anyways, we helped those two move their stuff, and there were, I think at the point of the time that people were counting stuff, it was 67 people on bikes helping move stuff from one part of town to another. The number has been either rounded up or they revised the count to 70 people, which is great.
Yeah.
And apparently
maybe they just counted everybody on bikes that showed up. Because not everybody that showed up, if I recall correctly, like not everybody that showed up actually participated in the move.
Right.
Some just rode along.
Like your wife Adele, for example. Yeah, she showed up. She carried my panniers because I had them strapped to the big trailer, the super trailer, the 8x4 foot trailer. And I didn't have a good place to put my panniers after that because the bike that hauls the trailer doesn't have a rack. So she carried my panniers for me, and you know that's a service.
Yeah.
So I would count that as participation.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's how they counted.
Totally. So there were television cameras that picked up some of this stuff. And first of all, I believe it was Coin News here in Portland did a little segment on it, and then it exploded into CNN.
You're kidding me?
No. Jonathan Moss noted that. The title of the CNN story was Man Moves Across Town by Bike.
Man.
And I mean, there was a man involved. There was a man involved. But Steph is also, you know, she's also a notable person, notable part of the bicycle community here in town.
And not a man.
And not a man. So they probably should have said the man and woman or couple or what have you.
Right.
You know, whatever the accepted nomenclature is. Aside from that, it's kind of cool to see this all getting traction, people, you know, hearing that it happened and whatnot. The problem to me, and this is only sort of partly a problem, but it's impossible for the media to recognize this event without also recognizing that Portlandia did a sketch.
Oh my God, these guys are crazy!
Featuring Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein, you know, and they're esteemed members of our community. I believe Fred just moved to town this year.
Art imitates life, guys.
Well, I think they were saying that life imitates art. They're like, you saw this on Portlandia, and now people are doing it, ignoring the fact that there's been a healthy tradition of moves by bike in this town for at least 15 years.
Right.
A lot of which have come through.
Little surprise that Coin would pick it up, because it does seem like it's, I mean, it's not so common, but it's common enough.
Right. Like it should almost be commonplace.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was particularly notable because Steph is kind of a famous person, and because it was a move of this size, I don't know, has been done before.
Okay.
I believe the records were broken on this one as far as number of participants and number of bicycles. So, and they had a lot of stuff. I mean, I don't think they had too much stuff, but it was a lot of folks. Portland Afoot did a great little video summation of the entire thing.
Sweet.
And we love the folks at portlandafoot.org. I think their mobile app is dropping soon. They'll be switching from print to an app that delivers their content.
Word.
So that's cool. But they made their video, it just kind of a count. It was, I believe it was a single frame as people were leaving the initial spot. And they counted on the screen with numerals the number of bicyclists that were leaving the area.
Okay.
So as bikes rode left off camera, off screen, they counted them. I happened to be number 42, which
nice.
Was cool the because, answer. Yeah, I'm a bit of a Douglas Adams fan. And that, of course, is the answer to life. The meaning of the universe, life, and everything.
Yeah,
I don't think I got that in the correct order, correct sequence.
Life, the universe, and everything.
Thank you. That's it. So anyways, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Awesome.
Anything happened for you?
Working. Just working. I left my bike at work today, actually.
Oh yeah.
I rode to work because that's what I do. You know, it was our Sunday outing day because it's Sunday.
Right. And you're a caregiver. you assist people with developmental disabilities?
Correct.
Or disabilities of many kinds. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, intellectual, developmental.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, so it was our outing, and as we were traveling back towards the house, realized, oh, it's 2:00.
I got an appointment to be at.
One, my shift has ended, and two, I got an appointment to be at.
I'm not getting paid for this anymore.
It wasn't quite as crass as that.
Right,
but,
right.
But, yeah, just talked to the other caregiver and the rest of the, what we call core members in our van. I was like, is it okay if... You know, you drop me off at my house, and everyone was agreeable to that.
Yeah.
So my bike is still there. I'm going to have to walk over there, maybe.
There we
maybe
go.
Maybe take a max. But
harkening back to old times.
Yeah.
You did a lot of walking.
I did a lot of
along
walking.
Along that route earlier in
along
life.
The, like along last the 205 year. Trail.
Sometimes 2 years ago.
Through 87. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three
has it been that
ago?
Long? When did you? Yeah.
2.5, my special lady friend.
Meredith says, yeah, 2.5. Okay. So that was about the time you got your bicycle.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that sounds right.
Yeah. Your graphite black Cannondale, is that right?
No.
Oh.
Specialized,
okay.
Highly modified now.
There we go, yeah.
Doesn't look anything. I actually, okay, so here's the thing. We're a little on a rabbit trail here, but...
Well, that's what this show's about.
Was over at our friend Steven's apartment down near PSU, or in PSU, actually.
Living downtown.
And on our way home... ran into or walked by an old original Cirrus, which is the same model and make of of mine.
It's better than running into the Cirrus.
Well, true.
Damages and whatnot.
But like, it brought me back and realized like how much I had changed over from the original parts on my bike.
Nice. You know? I'm not very observant. I don't think I realized how much modification you'd put into your bike.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the racks alone.
Okay.
You know, but then changed from flat bars to drops.
Yeah.
Put a whole new, like they had disc brakes on them before,
uh-huh.
But a whole new brand of disc brakes, you know. And, you know, with the drops, I put in bar end shifters opposed to the clicking indexing. Gosh, what else?
A couple of changes.
Yeah, I guess that's enough. Oh, and a new cassette in the back. Like it originally came with a 8. Gear cassette, and I put a 9 gear.
Oh yeah,
in the back.
Why have 8 when you can have 9?
Well, in the derailleur itself, like the I still have the original derailleur. It's actually a 9 gear derailleur.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah. It was just a matter of it was probably just that's how many, you know, thousands of derailleurs Specialized had.
Right. And as I understand, there's some interplay between those. Like most of the components that work with an 8 speed will also work with a 9 speed.
Right.
So
yeah, it's just a matter of how far the chain or the what is that called, cable, is being pulled one way or another.
Yeah. And that, I mean, if you can have more teeth, I always say, why not have more teeth in back? I'm not an athlete. I'm not a super amazing sort of person.
Right.
I went out actually today. Adele and I took just a pleasure ride, which I don't do a lot of. Like, I mean, I never train because I'm not a racer. But what might be considered a training ride, just going out and riding something difficult for fun. We went out and rode kind of around southeast Portland into Clackamas County, into Happy Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Which Happy Valley is probably about as idyllic as it would sound. And also very suburban.
You had some observations you shared with me earlier about that.
Yeah, I forget what I was saying. There's a covered bridge. We went underneath one of the, I think it's the only covered bridge in town that I know of. There's a few more in Oregon, but it's cute.
Yeah.
Cedar Crossing, I believe, is the name of the bridge.
Sounds like a place that would need a covered bridge.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. but yeah, there was a lot of hills. And what else did I say? Was there anything exciting about this?
You were mostly criticizing the suburban nature.
Oh, yeah,
things.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because you're riding through,
and
like,
how much money is in the area, I guess.
You're riding through, like, fairly rural areas, and then you, like, you break out into this, like, densely suburban area. It kind of shockingly, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's a nice place to live, but I prefer where I live.
Yeah.
I'm a reverse classist, is what I say.
That's right.
I look down on those who have more than me. I don't. I try not to.
I don't think you look down so much. Well,
we're looking up at them. Those houses are a higher elevation than this
yeah,
one.
There we go.
That's why they're more expensive. So, yeah, there's that. And
send checks payable to the Sprocket Podcast.
I got to say thanks again to all those folks who helped us raise money to cover this year's expenses.
Yeah, speaking of money, thank you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that we will refuse donations. If you like the program and you haven't given us money, like, I mean, we'll take it. But at the same time, there was a bunch of very generous people that helped us kind of raise the funds that we need to make it happen, pay for the hosting and buy some drinks for the guests and possibly some drinks for ourselves. So speaking of drinks, you have, what is it, a tonic water?
I have, your roommate Candace made me, it's club soda.
Okay, that's it.
That was the option, club soda or tonic water, and I went with club soda. But a club soda, lemon juice, stevia mixture, which is just barely sweet enough.
Like, okay.
It's a really tart drink, which is kind of how I wanted it.
Yeah, it's a really fancy 7-Up.
Yeah, I guess so.
More or less.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am drinking a little snifter of Old Crow. Neat.
Yes.
Old Crow is my whiskey of choice. It's it's a great whiskey.
That's your camping whiskey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to find, actually, in different places for whatever reason. It comes from Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey. It is, let's see here, 40% alcohol, 80 proof. And it's easy on the throat. It tastes good, feels good going down. And I could not find it in Boston. I probably didn't look hard enough, but it's really hard to find Old Crow on the East Coast. So
really,
which is funny because it's closer to Kentucky. But I assume maybe that's one of those like branding things where like it's just a brand that sells out
people
here.
People in Boston don't drink bourbon.
That's probably true. Yeah, they're what are they drinking? Something else.
Beer?
Jägermeister.
Jägers. Yeah.
No, I'm a closet Jägermeister fan also. So I mean, I can't judge.
We're asking the wrong people.
But Jägermeister also brings to mind, like, you know, drunken carousing by people in polo shirts, possibly collars popped. So,
sure.
So there's that. And we got nothing against those guys either. It's just a different culture. Let me stepping around all my statements. I'm a qualifier. I got to stop that. iTunes. If you have an iPhone, iTunes works again. I think we've got it figured out. Been working with Colin, the podcast host.
Oh.
He's the person who helps us get our show to the internet and a cool guy. We've been talking about trying to get him on. He and I are going to try and actually talk on the phone and he can explain what's up. I think he rides some bicycles around
in
Scotland.
Simply in the IT world.
Exactly. And anyways, he made some adjustments, and you can get to the iTunes store. There's been a big kerfuffle with the iTunes podcast app. It didn't work, and then it worked, and then it didn't work again. So I think we've ironed it out.
I'm a little miffed that you have to listen through the podcast app these days.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Apple. Not a good move.
Nah, I've been upset with Apple for years.
I love your new iPod, I'll tell you that, but... I used to listen to my podcast through the music app.
Yeah.
Why can't I still do that, jerks?
I liked it that way. Yeah. Well, you know.
Anyway.
If you haven't upgraded to iOS 5 yet, don't.
There you go.
Yeah. That's our admonition.
I came with 6. That's
it. Oh, I almost forgot. I met listener Jim at Ed and Steph's bike move. And Jim came from Colorado. He moved to Portland for the bike culture, and he listened to us before he met us. So I think he recognized my voice, which is a weird experience. Because
I was going to say, like, what is that like for you?
It's not like I'm famous. It's more just it's not embarrassing, but it has the same qualities as embarrassment. Just kind of like, oh, I didn't realize. Excuse me.
I kind of felt that a little bit when we had Dan Christensen on last week.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
I think,
he admitted
I think
that
just innocuously just was like, oh yeah, I listen to you guys. You're great. All of a sudden I was like,
get all bashful. Yeah, I don't think we aired that part of the conversation last week, but he was like, yeah, he listens to us. That's hi, Dan. How's it going?
Hey, keep on trucking.
Keep roll easy. Yeah. So last thing that I was going to say was Gigantic Brewing is great.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Little brewery here in town.
You can't eat at Gigantic Brewing.
They don't serve food, but I think by law they're required to offer an option for food. Otherwise, okay. They can't sell alcohol. But you can get pizza or something like that from some other place. Gigantic makes excellent beer. I had their IPA. I was there with my lady friend Adele and my special lady friend.
She still be your special lady friend when you're not?
When we're married?
You're already married?
Sure hope. I would hope.
Well, I guess once we're married, by default
that we would get even more special
wife
friend.
Wife implies special lady
yes,
friend.
Yes, I would hope so.
Okay.
Yeah. but yeah, she had their Belgian offering and I had the IPA and it's a cute little spot. It's great. They've got tables. I was thinking, all right, we're back. Technical difficulties. I was just saying that, the tables outside would be a great place to hang out and have beer in the summertime.
Yep.
So I plan to go to Gigantic Brewing again. I believe it's gigantic.com and good stuff. So we got some mail.
We got mail.
Look into that real quick.
Let's do this. We've got one headline.
Yeah, that's true.
let's look at mail first.
All right. Actually, the headline, I mean, there's not too much to say. This is a great article about a bicycle that was designed around a beer growler, like the big jug that you can fill and refill. The bicycle was designed around the growler so that you can, you know.
So you can carry the growler in your bottle cage?
It's a beer-centric bike.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyways, you can have a look at that. That was our headline. That's all. Now on to mail.
You've got mail.
All right. Johnny K comments on stickers and notes that a cargo bucket is a good place to display them. Oh, yeah. Does the bucket rattle, and is it stable? Get directions here, parentheses.
Yeah, yeah. We got a link to a great spot. Yeah.
Yeah. My personal experience is I take old tubes and wrap them around the handles, and it tends to muffle a lot of the rattling.
To cut down on, like, the moving parts aspect.
Right. Well, yeah. Like, that handle inevitably is going to bounce around and hit up against your bucket itself and make that sound.
My first bike bucket that I built had one of the metal handles.
Oh.
And those make all kinds of noise.
Yeah.
I got really tired of that really quick.
I bet.
But I never did anything about it.
You didn't pull off the handle.
Aaron, I think you're more innovative than I am. Good job.
Wow. I don't know. And lastly, on Piscataquis Village, reminds him of how St. Petersburg, Florida's pre-colonial section would be a utopia and asks, wouldn't connected buildings increase the fire hazard?
And yeah. Tracy Gayton responds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is cool.
Buildings would need to be built meeting a certain level of fire resistance within Piscataquis Village. There shouldn't be anything unfamiliar or unusual about this design pattern, though. Most buildings in the downtown centers of even older small towns have connected buildings. Thanks for checking us out.
Yeah. And this next bit is the thing I was most excited about.
Oh, yeah. You read this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Tracy wrote to us and said that a donor was inspired to pledge to the project. The quote from that donor to the Piscataquis Village project was, "I was aware of your efforts and was just now listening to your recent interview on the Sprocket podcast. I'm sold on the mission and hereby confirm my $10,000 contingent pledge." So apparently I don't know if that was like a listener who listened to us before or if it was someone who was just interested in Piscataquis Village
and then
listened to this
interview
and then said, "Hey, I've got $10,000 sitting around. Let me put this towards that vision, that dream." So either way, I'm very I'm grateful to be able to be a part of that whole thing.
Yeah.
And I really hope Piscataquis Village someday comes to reality. So
same here.
Anyways, you know, best wishes, Tracy. Best wishes to the donor. I hope this is a good it pays off and all that. And
I must say, when I found this out, like you emailed me.
Yeah.
And I found this out, I woke up my 2-year-old roommate. she was napping and I was like, "Oh my God." And I like ran downstairs to like show anybody.
Right.
And then I heard her crying and I felt really good.
There we go. Yeah. Well, it's tough life for her parents, but I'm sure she'll understand when she's much older that, you know, it's just a excitement cannot be contained sometimes.
Sometimes it cannot.
Yeah.
I think she knows this at least, if not, you know, consciously. She knows this internally.
Right, right. And I mean, or how did her parents take the news?
After they got over the shock of me waking up Lucy, they thought it was really cool.
Easy yeah. enough. And one more postscript. This is from Tracy to you, Aaron.
oh, yeah.
It's, what, Sagadahoc County, Maine?
Yeah, so instead of Saginaw,
it's not Saginaw.
Sagadahoc.
Yeah.
Sagadahoc.
And he says, if you ask me, that's the hardest county to pronounce. I still can't do it with or without a song. So, yeah. Well, hey, let's get to this interview that we taped with Sky, and we'll come back and let you know what's coming up down the pipe in a little bit. All right, so we are here in the luxurious basement of Velo Cult. I'm Brock Dittus. This is Aaron Flores.
Weird.
And we are here with Sky. Is it Boyer or Boyer?
Boyer.
Boyer, okay. I was going to give you the benefit of possibly upgrading to the French pronunciation.
Yeah, that fancy French stuff.
Thanks so much for making time for us tonight. You're obviously busy and got a lot of stuff going on, so I won't keep you too long. But very excited to get some of the backstory. So right before we press record, you were bringing us down here to the luxurious basement and telling us about the possibility, the prospect of doing weddings at Velo Cult. So, Velo Cult, first off, is a bicycle shop. I'll let you fill in the rest, but weddings.
Yeah, well, we had a wedding at our last store, one wedding. But now we have, I think, three weddings scheduled for next summer. So
wow, already? Just,
we do all kinds of events. About six nights a week we have events right now.
Yeah. You guys stay really busy.
Yeah, a lot of live music, fundraisers, parties of all kinds. Yeah, we stay busy.
Yeah. Well, maybe just for a start, we could talk about the history of the shop, and because you guys didn't start here in Portland, you started somewhere else.
Yeah, we started in San Diego 7 years ago, and the history is a little convoluted because I left the bike industry. I wasn't really stoked on the bike industry, so I left it. And I've spent 5 years buying and selling vintage road bikes, basically searching out Conagos, DeRosas, really cool bikes, and restoring them and reselling them online. And I outgrew my condo. I had about 100 bikes in my condo at one point. So I moved my entire operation to a workshop, about 900 square feet.
Okay.
And that accidentally became a bike shop. I had absolutely no intention of being a bike shop, no signage, nothing.
Right.
And there was no product. I mean, it was really just, you know, tires and stuff that I had for my restorations, mm-hmm. but there was really just me and my vintage bikes.
Yeah.
And within 6 months, I had to shut off my online business.
Wow.
And I had four employees already. And we were an accidental bike shop.
Yeah. And so, this was like 2003. I'm trying to do the math in my head.
Something like that.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And that shop lasted about 2 years before I outgrew that, and I had to move. And that was kind of a defining moment for us because, you know, we had to build a new store, but we had to figure out why the first store, which wasn't a store, became popular.
Yeah.
And also, I didn't want to be in the bike industry, so I had to kind of make it work for me. Like, but both of them kind of coalesced into one thing, which is, well, people dug it because it was my space.
Yeah.
You know, you can give it, you call it man cave, whatever, but it was my space. It wasn't your typical bike shop.
Right. So Velo Cult these days is noted for a couple of its amenities. You've got a big screen. You've got a stage. Mm-hmm. The whole place, there's a bar, which I just got a beer from, and you sadly cannot have one because you're tending. Mm-hmm. So later on, I hope. But what did the first one also have these same marks of manliness?
We had free beer. Okay. At it. That was about it. The second store, we did films once in a while, parties once in a while. It was a 1,200 square foot shop, so it wasn't much of anything. Coming here to a building that was eight times larger changed things. You know, we're a small shop in a big body, so we had to figure out how to fill space. So that's how we started. We putting in a stage, putting in a full size bar, not just a little bit of beer in the corner.
Yeah.
Being a full-blown venue, I mean, that was kind of born out of the fact that the building was just too damn big for us.
Yeah, yeah. I was just curious. You don't have to go into much detail if you don't want to, but just thinking about the bicycle industry, you said you had some disagreements with the way that it worked or something?
Well, I worked in about 10 bike shops, but I never, you know, I think everyone has this idea of the bike shop, this this vision of this cool hangout place, this fun place where you hang out and people know your name and you meet there for rides, you end there for rides, you know, after rides were over and you just have a lot of fun. And I never had that experience, never. I don't think most people have. You know, I think that's a rare occasion to find a bike shop that has that aspect.
Yeah, well, it seems like oftentimes there's a lot of pressure, right, to either, like, get there and buy something or leave if you're not going to be, if you're just going to be taking up space.
Exactly. And I'm not into that. I never dug it. I never liked any of the owners I worked for. I just never had that cool experience. And I just, you know, so I just got out of it and just started doing my own thing. And then full circle, I own a bike shop, kind of accidentally.
A huge one, so, just space-wise.
So it's my opportunity to do what I want to do.
Yeah. And you moved in, I'm trying to remember now how long it's been. It's probably been longer than I think, just because, this present location.
9 months.
Okay. Oh, wow. So that's not as long as I thought it was.
We're still babies here.
Yeah, because you've done so many events, I think that's why maybe it seems like you've been here for longer. But you've quickly established yourself as a location and a space for many things in Portland's bicycle culture.
Well, Portland, I didn't really know this before moving here, but Portland never had a central place for cyclists to throw parties, to throw a fundraiser. There just wasn't a spot. And I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. But I stepped into this big, giant building and decided to make a venue. And then everyone tells me, you know what? Portland never had this.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, within 3 weeks of being open, I can't think of the name of it. What's that bike event?
Pedalpalooza
started.
Yeah.
And we had 13 Pedalpalooza events here within 3 weeks of being open.
Yeah, and we were here for the disaster relief trials and the zombie ride. That was, I believe we were here for that. You also showed some films and many other things.
Yeah, lots of films, lots of parties. Today is a fundraiser. Really, it's we don't say no to anything. You know, we've had a burlesque party here. I mean, there's we could pretty much do it all.
Was it bicycle themed burlesque or just plain old burlesque?
They were bike riders.
Okay, there
you go. That's about it.
Good enough.
That kind of themes it. Yeah. At this point, is it Summit? Is that your son's name?
That's my boy's name.
Yeah, he's just wandering off into a corner. Aaron, anything? Did you have any questions at this point?
Okay. Well. Yeah, I guess as we're talking about history, what made you choose Portland from San Diego?
Oh, there was actually a lot of reasons. I didn't like San Diego as a whole, as a place to live. I wanted to live somewhere else.
Not many do.
I fit into Portland really well, and every single employee I had moved with me. Their girlfriends quit their jobs. They all moved up here as well. My boy was also 10 months old, and it was just... We didn't have the money, but it was kind of a screw it, let's do it anyway kind of attitude. The business was doing okay there, but it was never going to progress there. We were never going to progress as people. We couldn't afford to live there. And Portland, we've been wanting to move here for years, and we finally just pulled the plug and said, we're going no matter what. And that's, we did it.
Were you originally from San Diego, or did you come there from somewhere else also?
I grew up in Los Angeles.
Okay.
San Diego was just one of those things where... You know, I lived in Washington, D.C. for a year, and I wanted to move back to the left coast, but I didn't want to move back to where I grew up. And San Diego was just there. There was no real reason to. It was just there, and I did it.
Yeah.
Planned on being there for 2 years, but kind of put down roots and stayed for 8. And it was about 6 years too long.
Yeah.
2 years would have been just fine.
My wife and I, on the end of our first long-distance bike tour, walked from downtown to the airport. And there are not too many towns where you can walk to the airport, which we were kind of impressed by. But you can do that in the space of 2 years, and then I suppose it's probably time to move on. As far as just working with bikes here at the shop, I've had some work done. I love what you guys have done for me. One of your employees built me a fantastic wheel, which, different than all the other wheels that I've had, has not yet broken underneath my weight and my panniers. What distinguishing marks do you think your, approach to bicycling, has maybe, between this shop and other shops in town? What makes you guys different, or what do you focus on?
Well, obviously the beer and the venue separate us. But as a shop, we definitely have always focused on subcultures. Even though I was a racer for, you know, typical road, mountain, track, I would say our emphasis more lies in subcultures. Touring, cyclocross, randonneuring. I mean, these are typically things that you just don't find in bike shops.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're into touring, I mean, good luck walking into a bike shop and finding all the gear. Now, that being said, our shop has maybe only 5% of the product that we need to have. You know, we're still growing. We still are reinvesting the money and trying to grow it. So it's definitely not a finished product, and it definitely doesn't represent that yet. Mm-hmm. But our vision is to definitely represent that more. I mean, if you come in as a subculture writer, I mean, I want the shop. I want you to know right away that this is my shop.
Right, right.
So most bike shops focus on road, mountain, hybrid. Portland's a little different. You have cargo bike shops, recumbent bike shops. Everyone's highly specialized, which is actually kind of nice because we get the same customers between each other. Like, why would I ever carry a cargo bike when there's three bike shops that specialize in only cargo bikes?
Right.
You know, so we all get to send customers to each other because we all have our own specialty. It's yeah. actually kind of nice to have as many bike shops in the town.
Yeah. I guess that means you could be far more amenable to each other, too. Like, there's less competition in some ways because you're specializing in a certain market.
I have never worked in a city with bike shops as friendly as they are here. And it's great. Coming, yeah. You know, it's, you could imagine.
Yeah.
How aggravating it would be having shops that don't get along.
For sure. Yeah. Do you have any horror stories from earlier?
Yeah, I should probably not get into too many details. But
as I was asking the question, I realized that's probably not, you know, it's probably not public material. At some point are planning on carrying tents, was a rumor that I had heard. Is that...
As far as the touring, yeah, tents, stoves, the whole thing, all the accessories for cycle touring.
Yeah. Are you yourself a tourer? Have you done long distance?
I've done a lot of tours, yeah. Mostly off-road backcountry mm-hmm. tours. With some pavement tours.
Yeah.
And I'll do more and more pavement tours because the ability to off-road tour in Portland isn't that great.
Right, yeah, there's just not that many opportunities right. within a close driving distance, I suppose, or cycling distance.
Right.
I mean, you can drive out of the mountains if you want to, but yeah, there's a lot more pavement than there is dirt around here.
But pavement touring out of Portland's great. Mm-hmm. So I'll be doing a lot more pavement touring.
Yeah. In the past, when you did off-road touring, like how long were you out for?
Well, the longest, maybe 5 days. Back when I was really doing that, you know, the big Great Divide wasn't done yet.
Mm-hmm.
So really, to do an off-road tour, it's months of looking at maps, trying to piece together trails and water holes.
Yeah.
To make a 3-5 day trip. I mean, you just can't do month-long tours mm-hmm. when you're off-road.
Yeah.
Well, at least then you couldn't. Now you have the Great Divide, and that kind of changes everything.
Yeah, with resupplying and all that sort of thing. You and I, Aaron, had an experience last year that was kind of unwittingly off-road.
Right. The Forest Service roads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were just planning using Google Maps, and that turns out they list a bunch of roads that may not necessarily be suitable for your road bike. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's good times.
When you're mountain bike touring. And I did a tour once where the map was loaded with springs and streams, every single one of them dry.
Oh.
So you get yourself into trouble real fast when you're mountain bike touring. And it's hard to find people to do it with you, so you end up solo most of the time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I kind of like that kind of challenge, but you can get yourself in trouble pretty quickly when you're out there.
Not yeah. when you're without a source of water.
Yeah. It seems like bicycles kind of run in your blood. When did you first tap into that? Like, I assume you had a bike as a kid.
As a kid, yeah, about 4 years old, I started BMXing, mostly jumping. I wasn't a racer. But at 9 years old, I turned to velodrome racing.
Okay.
And by the time I was 10, I was doing national races.
Is this like fixed gear, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quickly went to road bikes. I wasn't a good velodrome racer because I just wasn't heavy enough to sprint. Wasn't a good road racer because I was the team captain of the road team. But when you're 11 years old, nobody really understands what team captain means. And it's a team sport, and the fastest guy doesn't win.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing mountain bike racing for training and winning every single race. I could do, at 11 years old, I could do 80 miles the day before and still win the mountain bike race. The fastest guy wins in mountain biking. Yeah. And that really appealed to me, not having to worry about teams and tactics, but just being a mountain bike racer, fastest guy wins, done story.
Yeah.
I'd stuck with mountain biking the longest, I think, probably 15 straight years.
This is the sort of thing that your parents would probably be supporting you in then. Were they cyclists as well? Or
no, for the most part, I raced myself, and it was all on my own.
Okay.
So in order for me to get to races, I had to be fast enough to be sponsored, to have teammates take me. very, very difficult. I did not have support.
Yeah. That's kind of a by your own bootstrap sort of story then. That's impressive. And that that took you into adulthood when you were still doing racing and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, by the time I was 16, I was, cars, girls, kind of fading out, but still continued to win because I was really fast as an early teen.
Yeah.
And that kind of carried over for many years. And then by the time I was 20, I started to become around mid-pack and started to lose its appeal. Some major crashes happened and pulled the plug after that.
Yeah, yeah. That's intense. And then I guess at that point, being an adult, that you already told us about getting started with like kind of having your own collection of bicycle frames and parts and whole bikes sitting in your condo and mm-hmm. And then coming to Portland. When you came to Portland, did anything surprise you about the bicycle culture that existed here or the culture in general?
I was surprised by the absolute lack of mountain biking here. The lack of trails. I thought there was something somewhere, mm-hmm. and there kind of is something somewhere, but it's. I was hoping for a lot more. I think everyone who is a mountain biker is hoping for a lot more here. But the Northwest Trail Alliance does some meetings here in my shop, and I talk to them a lot, and hopefully things start to happen here.
And they're working hard on several options that I'm aware of. I think Bike Portland has reported on something in the West Hills down near the Selwood Bridge, a big property that was just acquired, and the Gateway Green project on the east side that someday might be developed. But all of these things are kind of a long ways out from being actual official mountain bike courses. So,
way out. Plus, there's just the lack of trails means there's just no mountain bikers here. And without mountain bikers, there's no political power. There's no, there's problems that arise. So it's all stuff that has to be worked on.
What would you hope for? What's your ultimate win situation for Portland and mountain biking?
Well, it sure would be nice to have 30 miles of single track in Forest Park. Mm-hmm. I don't see it happening anytime soon. I don't think anyone does.
Right.
But, man, that would be a really cool boost to Portland.
Mm-hmm. And it's not quite the same riding on Leif Erikson Drive, right? I mean,
no, Fire Road is not mountain biking. But even cyclocross, think about it. This is probably the largest cyclocross population in America, and they're going up and down fire roads. They might be able to find a mile of single track here or there, but you have cyclocrossers that go up and down fire roads, and then they go over to stairs and run up and down stairs, and that's not really the full picture, For as many cyclocrossers as there are, there's probably be some more trails.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you were training to swim the English Channel. All you have available to you is a pool, and the pool is like heated and warm, and if you actually had the channel to practice in, you'd probably be a lot better. So maybe it's similar to that.
they are pretty fast here. I'll give them that. But it would be nice to have more trails.
As far as just Portland in general, is there anything else that surprised you when you arrived? Did it meet the caricature or the cartoon that it's become in public?
I've actually spent a lot of time in Portland.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time here traveling and whatnot, so nothing really caught me by surprise.
That wasn't a cold move.
But it is, it's pretty much Shangri-La. lifelong Portlanders will always say, "What? You left San Diego? You left the sun? Mm-hmm. You left San Diego for here?"
Right.
Well, if you do a pro-con list, San Diego has the weather.
Right.
Well, the other list is Portland, and it's everything else. I mean, it is everything else. So it really doesn't balance out. At least we're 1 hour from the desert. At least we do have sun with a little bit of driving.
Yeah.
And the summers here, you can't beat the summers here.
No.
You can't.
Yeah.
So it's really well worth being here. We're super excited to be here.
Yeah. What were some of the cons in San Diego?
Cons were, a lack of culture. The bike industry is very triathlon driven. And for a very subculture set shop like mine, I had customer base, of course, but it was very limited and it wasn't going to grow. I like traveling. I like weekend trips. I like day trips. And it's the corner of the country. You have 2,000 miles of desert to the east. Mm-hmm. You have Mexico, which you have to drive a day through Mexico to get to anything fun, safe.
Right.
You can't go west because of the ocean. And you can't go north because you have to drive a day to begin your trip. Yeah. So there are no weekend trips. Like, I liken it to, I mean, I think it might be even worse than New York City. Because, you know, kind of when you move to New York City, you just don't leave.
Sure.
But at least they have trains that you could easily get out to other places. And San Diego, not so much. Mm-hmm. You really kind of feel stuck there.
Yeah. Because there's not even really, I know there are commuter trains down in the L.A. area, but there's not really any commuter trains leaving San Diego, aside from, like, Amtrak.
Nothing leaving, yeah. And there's Amtrak, but, yeah, again, you have to travel half a day just to get to somewhere.
Yeah.
Did you ever make the ride through Camp Pendleton?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I was, I've probably told this story many times on the podcast, but just like amazed that a military reservation lets you ride your bike through there and, you know, and relatively few questions asked. Now they're checking IDs. They may not have even had done that, you know, back in the day, but.
Yeah. I'd be too scared to ride my bike through there.
They have tank crossing signs. It's weird. So, yeah.
Well, after 9/11, it was blocked for probably 5 years and you had to ride I-5 freeway for like 8 miles. And that's not a fun place to ride a bike.
Seriously.
Yeah. What's the maybe some of the most dangerous situations you've ever been in on a bicycle,
on or off road?
Gosh, probably the velodrome. I think velodrome racing is one of the most dangerous things you could do. I don't think the spectators really understand that. Mm-hmm. They get to be a track racer to know that. But yeah, I would say track racing is more dangerous than mountain biking.
Well, there are relatively few incidents that I, like, you don't think about, you know, crazy crashes, although I'm sure they happen, but, like, that's not typical. Compared to mountain biking or, like, I was just thinking of NASCAR for whatever reason, like, you just think of things spinning out and going out of control, but I would see, like, on a closed course in the velodrome, when you're tied to a fixed gear bike, that could lead to some interesting situations.
It's the close proximity, it's the aggressiveness. You know, everything's legal as long as your hands and feet are on the bars. So headbutting, elbows, I mean, it's a really? It's a contact sport.
It's kind of like hockey?
It takes a lot of training. I mean, my training was very significant, and it was me as a little junior and a 160-pound trainer, and he would just go up and down the track for an entire day hitting me. Just run up the track, come down the track, hit me. Hit me from all angles, push you, elbow you, kick you. I mean, it is a tough sport. I mean, it's a hard sport. It's a lot of crashing. It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
Sounds like the roller derby of the bicycle world.
To an extent it is. Yeah, as long as your hands and feet stay on the bike, it's actually legal. Yeah.
That actually makes me want to try it now, because I've never been on a velodrome in my life.
It'd probably be hard for someone to push you around.
I suppose. I mean, I'm a huge guy, but I'm also, that means I can't change direction very quickly. I'm kind of sluggish, as most huge guys are, so yeah. But I'll have to give it a shot sometime. I've heard the Alpenrose Velodrome will let you go in and ride around for free. And I'm trying to remember, there was one that somebody had built as like a college project or something in town. I don't know if that's still here or not, but
yeah. It's kind of a hobby thing. It's not something you actually race on. But
right. Yeah. Okay. As far as VeloCult, what's coming up in the future? Obviously, you were saying like you're slowly expanding your stock to specialize to long-distance riders and touring people and that sort of thing. You've got events. There's an event tonight and plenty more on the calendar, I'm sure.
Yeah, about 6 nights a week we have something going on. We can fit up to 400 people. So some big, some small, but there's always something going on. And as our clientele increases, the whole shop's going to improve.
Yeah.
Our coffee shop is going to get more features. Our beer is going to go from 5 taps to 15 this spring. If it continues to build up, we might have 30 to 40 in the future taps. You know, we want to be a legitimate microbrew beer bar.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to be a couple beers in the corner of a bike shop. We want to be equal parts bike shop, bar, and venue.
Right.
So all that stuff is going to increase with the added clientele.
Yeah. And again, just to, we may have said this before, but I really respect creating a space that's a low-pressure environment and a place where, like, you really are creating a culture or possibly even a cult of, you know, just people hanging out and talking bikes and, you know, a place to exist, not just a place to get your bike work done. To be noted, you guys are open until 10 p.m., is that right?
At least 10 p.m.
Okay.
If there's something big going on, we still open later.
Right. And that means you can get your bike worked on, like, if you have something going wrong with it late at night. This is one of the only options I can think of that's open as late as it is. So that's also very nice.
Yeah, it's what I want. It's my living room. It's my baby. I want people hanging out, even if they're not buying anything. I want people doing homework. I want people having business meetings in my store, like a coffee shop would be. Mm-hmm. I just really like having community.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We're glad it's here. I'm trying to remember. I remember reading of something similar to this in Denver, if I'm not mistaken. There was a place that also had beer on tap. I assume Velocult is superior, but it's cool to see that this sort of thing is popping up in other parts of the country as well. You guys also have a couple of products. I know you've got independent authors. A bunch of folks in Portland have written some books about stuff. We were here for the Hop in the Saddle release party. Mm-hmm. You also have Ellie Talheimer's Oregon touring book. There's a bunch of other stuff. Velocult itself has some illustrated books. Is that right?
Yeah. That's actually something that was another Velocult accident. We kind of run on accidents. But my very first employee was a 22-year-old. And I taught him how to work on bikes. And, you know, about a year after I hired him, his name was Anthony Marino, quickly started to realize that he was far too talented to be a bike mechanic. And I basically sent him home. He's been with me ever since. But he does nothing but photography, graphic design, art, anything art-related. Yeah. And he's the reason why we've grown so fast in only 7 years and why we have a worldwide audience is through his photography, his graphic design, and there was a time when he was making a new logo a month.
Wow.
And every month was new t-shirts, new hoodies, new hats, and we're selling them all over the country. Huh. And that's him. Our book, all that stuff is all him. And that's,
constant rebranding.
It's not me. You know, I own a bike shop, but really the branding, the national appeal kind of comes out of Anthony.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And, I mean, just the time that I've spent waiting for my bike to be worked on, I've flipped through some of those volumes, and it's really impressive visual work. So, anything else people should know about Velocult?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I think we've hit it. We're building a theater in the basement. We have a private lounge in the basement. This building is 8 times larger than our old store, so it leaves us a lot of room to play. Oh, another thing is we're in April. We're opening up a frame building studio.
Ooh.
We're going to build another bar stools, and you can sit at this bar stool and look through this big giant window and watch frame builders working.
Ah.
And we'll have several different shifts of frame builders. And so there's always someone with a torch or file in their hand. You'll always be able to come in and have a beer, even 9 o'clock at night, and watch a frame builder working.
So will these be like Velocult branded frames or...
No. No, these are going to be frame builders, their own businesses. It's their own thing. I'm renting out the space to them. But, you know, my customers are going to want to see it. But frame builders are usually hidden. You know, we're big fans of steel bikes and custom frame builders.
So are we.
Yeah. And usually frame builders are hidden in their garages. They have a really hard time getting their name out. And, you know, in the summertime, I could imagine these guys having 100 people a day Facebooking them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have the logos on the back wall, and I don't know, I kind of want to see them, you know, progress as an art as well. So I'll do my part.
That's kind of cool. It's like the Tillamook Cheese Factory. You get to watch people putting milk products into plastic, I guess, but way more exciting. So
I hope it's more exciting than cheese.
Well, thank you. The website is velocult.com.
That's it.
You're on Twitter, Facebook, all the rest. And obviously recommend anybody who's coming in from out of town to stop by. You're at it's 42nd and near Sandy, but what's the best way to find you for anyone who may be new to the area or maybe someone who just doesn't know Portland that well?
Well, our address is the Summer of Love, 1969 42nd Street. So, and if you know Portland, we're across from the Moon and Sixpence.
There we go. Yeah, also a great place to have a beer if you know if you haven't if you plan on coming back for another pint over here, I suppose. So, yeah. Well, thank you, Sky. I really appreciate your time, and we wish you the best in the future of Velocult.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Sky for a fantastic interview. That was a lot of fun.
I think I said like 3 sentences throughout that entire
Right, interview. Right. Well, I mean, he's a cool guy.
Total starstruck.
Starstruck, yeah. No, I was too. But, you know, what can you do?
Yeah.
I'll go in and talk to him tomorrow and just be like, so, will you fix my bike?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to mention I have a coworker who went there
Oh, yeah?
And had his bike
tuned up.
Yeah. What was his experience? Or why?
He loved it.
Did he say it was great?
Yeah, he thought it was great. He says, apparently there's people who go down there that don't really have much to do with bikes.
Uh-huh.
They just like to watch everybody work.
Yeah.
While they have a beer.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of cool. I mean, the way the shop is set up, you can watch the mechanics as they're fixing your bike.
Right.
Which isn't always the way a shop is set up. Sometimes if it's a small shop, there's no other option. But a lot of shops have like a back work area, which I always think of like...
what are they doing back there?
Exactly.
That machine.
It's kind of like... what was that book? And it made into a movie with Edward Norton and Brad Pitt.
The Wizard of Oz?
No. Fight Club.
Fight Club.
I don't know why it took me that long to think.
I was so distracted with my punchline.
Whenever there's like a setup, like a bike shop or whatever, where like they take your stuff away from you and take it into a back room and you don't know what's going on, it makes me think of Brad Pitt and the clam chowder. And that, you know, that's
what,
no good.
Yeah.
No
what
good
are you doing
anybody.
To my baby.
Exactly. So anyways, Velocult has a great viewing area, and you can just sit there and have a beer and watch, or you can just sit there and not have a beer and just watch. So,
or you can sit there and not watch and have a beer.
There's so many possibilities. They actually, I think, as I recall, they just started a series of gold sprints, which
really?
That was that gauntlet that was thrown to you and I by the Ellies. To see like, you know, how we do and whatnot. Gold sprints are stationary bicycle races. So like I said, I'm not much of a racer, but you know, if you got to do something fun,
but they've got those affixed there now.
They have them there. Yeah. And I believe through March, they're having a series of gold sprints races. So you can go in and participate and all that. I think it's Friday nights, but go to velocult.com for information.
There we go, honey. That could be our date.
there we go. The SprocketPodcast.com. Making the world better.
Now you really regret.
One relationship at a time. What do we got coming up, Aaron? What are our shows?
Coming up, we have on the 10th, Chris Smith from Portland Transport.
That's right. Transport God coming in to tell us everything.
He's going to solve all of our transportation problems. Yeah.
And he's a nice guy.
Yeah. Ellie Blue and Martina Farner on the 17th on women and the cycling industry, which is one I've been looking forward to for a very long time.
As have I.
The 24th, Jonathan Maus from bikeportland.org.
That's right. And that'll actually be, well, we're going to pre-tape that one during his work week. Because on the weekends, you know, he works hard during the week. Yeah, I got to give him some time off. And that'll be fun.
On the 3rd, Miki Blizzard from Freeway Slayer.
Yeah, well, she stopped the West Side Freeway from being built over in Washington County, just on the west side of the Portland area.
That's not her organization. That's more her title.
This is what she did.
All right.
Yeah, she worked with, I believe it's Congressional Representative Earl Blumenauer, the bicycling advocate on Capitol Hill. She worked with him for a long time, and she had some success diverting a freeway project. Like, it was going to happen, and then it didn't. So
cool.
We're going to talk to her about that. So, well, hey, this is the very end of everything.
This is it. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message. Drunk dial us.
That's right.
Drunk text us. Drunk send us pictures of things that are
Not your job.
Abstract. 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. Find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Good night.
All this red carpet in here, and we're like, oh, this would be a great theater. Kind of laughed it off, and within a day or two I went to Craigslist and I saw that the historic Hollywood theater was getting rid of all their seating.
Oh.
And they're only a block and a half from us.
Right.
So
easy move.
Bought a whole bunch of seats. We made our own legs for them. We have 40 of them, so we can have really cool private screenings of 40, which is, you know, it's a good size.
Yeah.
And we also made the seats mobile, so we could turn them towards each other, and most of the bike organizations run their meetings down here now.
Oh, really?
So it's all free. We just let all the bike organizations, you know, use it as they wish. But when we're ready to start showing films, you know, we'll do it. We'll have art students showing films. We'll have film nerds coming down here and doing films. It's just the right size and free.